Now, as we turn back to Psalm 104, I wanted to show you this picture of this fish. This is not just any picture of any fish. This is one of the finalists in this year's Comedy Wildlife Photography Awards, which is like the Wildlife Photography Awards, but more amusing. This is a genuine thing, not something I made up. This is one of the finalists, Smiley, by Arthur Tiemann, and the final winner will be announced later this month. And this is some kind of parrotfish, I think. I think there are three things that we can think as we look at this picture this morning. And I've just changed the live stream to not just looking at a picture of the fish for the rest of the service. The three things I think we can think as we look at that picture of the fish this morning. First is, what an incredible photographer to take a picture like that. Even though this is the Comedy Wildlife Photography Awards, this is still a serious piece of photography achievement, isn't it? To get something so clear and to understand his subject so well, to get that picture, Arthur Tiemann, whoever he is clearly a very incredible photographer. I think the second thing we can think today is, what a wonderful fish, isn't it? A beautiful, kind of pretty, colourful fish. And if I went to an aquarium and all they had was just that kind of parrotfish, I don't think I'd be disappointed. I suppose it depends how much I'd pay to get in. But it's a wonderful fish to look at. And I think the third thing we can think as we look at that picture of the fish today is, what an amazing God. That's why I want us to focus our attention today. What an amazing God who created fish like that, such colour and such beauty and such amazement, who created all of those scenes that we saw at the beginning of our service in that video, those amazing pictures of God's creation. What an amazing God. That's why I want us to focus our attention today. I'm not going to give you any photography tips. I'm not really going to talk much about fish, but I do want us to see the amazing God who made this world. And we're going to follow Psalm 104, which gives us a kind of overview picture of God's creation. It's a bit like following a kind of nature documentary, giving us a tour of different parts of this world. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to watch a kind of, we're not actually going to watch it, we're going to go through a David Attenborough style nature documentary in Psalm 104 that begins the opening scenes of this documentary, the first 9 verses, taking us back to where it all began. In that initial act of creation, where God spoke everything into being, everything created out of nothing. That act that shows so clearly his majesty, his authority, his power, how great and amazing a God he is. It's a psalm that invites us to look up and to see the heavens. You look at the expanse of sky above us. It's one of those things that makes us feel so small when we look up and see the great sky, the heavens. And yet from God's perspective, things are very different. So his heavens, verse 2, we read, he stretched them out like a tent. When he made this world and he created the heavens and earth, it was like he was just stretching out the sky like a tent. And those clouds that we look up and see in the sky with no control over them, they seem so random, we don't know whether the clouds are going to bring sunshine or, as today, rain. And yet to God, things are very different. These clouds in verse 3, they're like his chariot that he rides on. Doesn't literally ride on them, but it's a sign that they're completely under his control. They're created by him for his purposes. And then having looked at the heavens of day 2 of creation, we move on to the water and the land of day 3. And we think about the mountains and the seas. It's interesting that with all of the photos that were sent in, including the ones that we weren't able to show, lots of mountains and lots of sea. It's that when we think about the majesty of God in creation, we often think about the mountains and the sea. Again, those things that make us feel very small, but they don't make God feel small. We read from verse 6 how God relates to the mountains and the sea. He's the one who told the mountains where they should go, and who told the sea where it should go. At your rebuke, the waters fled, verse 7. They took to flight. The mountains rose to the place that you appointed for them. Verse 9, you set a boundary that they may not pass. Here is where the sea will end. It will not go any further. All under the control of God, the mountains and the seas and everything in between. And we see it all today. And we humbly proclaim, you are amazing, God. Then as the documentary in Psalm 104 continues from verse 10, we see that this great majestic God of such power and authority is a God who is intimately involved with his creation day by day. He's not a God who just made this world and then disappeared somewhere else. Now each day, everywhere we look, if we have eyes to see it, we can see his hand at work caring for this world. And in the psalm, verse 10, we follow the course of a river. You have these springs gushing and the water flows down between the hills. And then as we look, you have beasts of the field there, and you have wild donkeys coming to drink from the river. And then you hear the birds in the trees, and you see the grass growing for the livestock, and you see the farmers coming along and cultivating the crops that gets turned into bread for people to eat. And behind all of that is the Lord. It's the Lord who makes the springs gush forth in the valleys. It's the Lord who causes the grass to grow for the livestock. It's the Lord who is causing the grass to grow either side of the church building at the moment. It's the Lord who causes the crops to grow for the farmers to gather. And he gives the farmers the energy to do that as well. Who is it who enabled you to have breakfast this morning? It's the Lord. As we see his care each day, we humbly proclaim, you are amazing, God. Then as the documentary continues from verse 16, the next scenes point us to various different habitats around us in the world, and we see God's wisdom in the way that everything has its place and has its season. And yet all fits together into this beautiful majesty of creation that we see around us. So we see from verse 17, you have the birds, where they have their nests in the trees. And the stork has her home in the fir trees. And then you have the mountains where the goats live, and the rocks where the rock badgers live. And then you have the different times of day, and as the night comes, then out come the creatures of the forest who creep about looking for food. And then when the sun rises up the next morning, verse 22, new creatures come out, a new day begins, a new cycle of creation, all happening according to God's perfect timings, all in his perfect wisdom, all of it working together into this big picture of the beauty of creation we see around us. We look and we see God's wisdom, and we humbly proclaim, you are amazing, God. As we continue the documentary of Psalm 104, the next bit, we dive down into the oceans, and we see that these huge, great expanses of water are filled with life. Verse 25, here is a sea great and wide, which teems with creatures innumerable, too many to count. You've got the living things small and great, you've got the plankton, you've got the giant squid, you've got everything in between, and things that are even bigger than the giant squid. Loads and loads of different types of life underneath the ocean. And all of these different types of life, all of the fish and the mollusks and the whales and the sharks, all have one thing in common. They all look different, they all have different feeding patterns and everything else, but they all have one thing in common. They all completely depend on God for their life. Verse 27, there's this picture of all of these fish in the sea, all looking up to God to give them food. Obviously, they may go out hunting for food or looking around the sand or the rocks or whatever else, but ultimately the food comes from the hand of the Lord. He opens it and they receive. And when he withdraws his hand, then the food is withdrawn. When he hides his face, they're dismayed. When he takes away their breath, they die. When he sends his spirit, they live and they are renewed. That this God is a God of life, filling the oceans with life, this innumerable, extravagant, amazing life. Each creature, including ourselves, completely dependent on God for life and breath. And we see that, and we humbly proclaim, you are amazing, God. Then we come to the final scenes of the documentary as the closing part comes. And we get a lot about praising God, which makes sense in light of what we've just seen. May the glory of the Lord endure forever. May the Lord rejoice in his works. I'll sing to the Lord as long as I live. I'll sing praise to my God while I have being. But then there's one other verse that's a bit odd. Well, that might initially seem a bit odd. That shows us that there's something a bit more to say than just praising God. It's a verse that, as I read the psalm earlier, it may have struck you as seeming a bit out of place. I'm talking about the first part of verse 35. Let sinners be consumed from the earth, and let the wicked be no more. It sort of comes in a bit randomly into the psalm, doesn't it? That you have all of this description of this beauty of creation. You have the mountains and the seas and the birds and everything else. And then suddenly at the end, you have these two lines about sinners being consumed from the earth and the wicked being no more. They're not the kind of words you would find at the end of a normal David Attenborough documentary. They are similar to some things that you might find David Attenborough saying. They are words that recognise the damage that we have done to creation, that we continue to do in our selfishness as humans. Often David Attenborough documentaries end with some kind of recognition of the ecological challenges that face us. And it's also a psalm that gives us a vision of things being different, where David Attenborough might point to how things could be different if we pulled together as humans and did things a bit differently. But this verse gives us a vision for things being different too. But as we come to this verse, it points us to the fact that the problem in this world is far more serious than David Attenborough recognises at the end of any of his documentaries. The problem is far more serious, and the solution is far more radical than anything that he has ever proposed. The problem in this world is far more serious, and the solution to that problem is far more radical. So what's the more serious problem in this world? What's the more serious problem as we look around at the damage that humans have caused to this planet? What's the serious problem? The Bible captures it in one word: sin. Sin. The whole of this psalm has given us a really important reason to be concerned about the well-being of this planet. And the reason isn't the simple reason of self-preservation, that we need somewhere to live and we want somewhere for our children and grandchildren to grow up. And nor is it the reason that things just look pretty and we like things to look pretty, so we want to look after things because they're pretty. Now, the reason that this psalm gives us is the glory of God. That the whole of creation points to his greatness. That the whole of creation, overflowing with life that he cares for day by day, points to the majesty and the wisdom and the splendour and the power and authority of its creator, our Lord God. And the kind of things that people like David Attenborough would talk about in their documentaries are real issues, but for much more serious reasons than he would acknowledge. Things like biodiversity, it's a real issue because all of these diverse animals and plants have been created by God, who cares for them, who sustains them, who decides where they live and what they eat. Ocean pollution, is an issue. It's not just an issue because of the future of our children and grandchildren. It's an issue because it's God, our Creator, who filled these oceans with life and continues to feed and provide for these animals. Things like deforestation are an issue, not just because of our well-being as humans, they're an issue because these trees have been planted by the Lord, who continues to nourish them. You even get a description in verse 16 of trees being described as the trees of the Lord that are watered abundantly, the cedars of Lebanon that he planted. There's been lots of talk in recent years, especially, of the impact of our human behaviour on the environment and on trees and oceans and biodiversity and everything else. But our behaviour in all of these areas points us to a much more serious problem. The problem is not just that we're disappointing David Attenborough. The problem is we're challenging the majesty of God, who created all of these things. The real problem that the Bible points us to is our sin. That we love ourselves more than we love God. And so we like to live life our own way, not giving our Creator the respect that we should do, not enjoying his world in the way that we should do. That attitude of sin flows out in all kinds of wickedness. It affects the way that we think, the way that we act, the way we speak, the way we relate to each other, the way we use our time, and it affects the way that we relate to the natural world around us, the way that we use resources that God has given. So often we use them selfishly, exploitatively. And this sin leaves us guilty before the God who made us. And we deserve to be punished for our sin because God is a perfectly holy and just God. Without God's intervention, what we would face is that we'd all be consumed. Verse 35, let sinners be consumed from the earth and let the wicked be no more. Giving us this vision of a world without human wickedness. A world with restored harmony between humans and creation, with renewed relationships between humans so that all humans can enjoy this world as God intended. That's the vision the psalm points to in verse 35, and none of us fit into that vision because all of us in different ways are all guilty of sin, guilty of failing to live in this world as God created us to. If we think about a perfect, unspoilt world, if you introduce me into it, I immediately would spoil it as I am. It's a vision where we don't fit. That's the biggest problem that we have as humans. That all of the ways that we impact the environment are pointing us to a bigger issue of our sin, an issue at the very heart of who we are, an issue that we can't change just by shopping differently or travelling with different means of transport or recycling more effectively. This is a much more serious issue. That we stand guilty before God, we're caught in this pattern of sin, we deserve to face God's judgment and to be consumed forever. That's a more serious problem. This psalm also points us, as we continue to read through the Bible, it points us to a more radical solution to the problems in this world. A more radical solution. A solution that we've started to explore in our series through John's Gospel, if you've been with us, or if you come back, Lord willing, next Sunday. A solution that comes when the Creator visits his creation as a man, where God the Son, the one through whom and for whom all things were made, comes down into this world, born as a baby, growing up as a man, beginning a process of making all things new. Making all things new by dying on the cross to deal with that sin that would consume us, that has shut us out from the perfection of God's presence, that sin we're all guilty of. And then rising again from the dead so we could have new life. So as we trust Jesus, he makes us new. The Bible describes us as new creations if we're in Christ. New people with new lives, new relationship with God, new purpose, and new hope. New hope of a new home in a glorious new creation, a new earth. In Romans chapter 8, the Apostle Paul talks about this world. This world as being a world that's groaning. Not just to us as humans, that we long for things to come to an end, for suffering to come to an end, for war to come to an end, for poverty to come to an end, but the actual planet is groaning, it's crying out for things to change, for its bondage to corruption to come to an end, as Paul puts it. Groaning to be set free. And the last book of the Bible points us forward to the moment when that will happen. When Jesus will return, will come back, and there will be a new heaven and a new earth, a glorious, transformed new home for all of God's people, as we will be raised with new bodies to enjoy a new creation forever, a creation overflowing with life and beauty, but with none of the pain or darkness of this world, as all sin and all wickedness is removed from us as we're made new and removed from the world. The day when that prayer of Psalm 104 verse 35 is completely answered, where we see Jesus face to face and we are made like him. And when those who have refused to trust in God are shut out into darkness. And all of the Lord's people who've been made new, forgiven, brought to new life, will enjoy this perfect world forever. That vision that by ourselves we would all be shut out of, we would be consumed. Yet in Jesus, we can share in that vision of an eternal new creation. The closing scenes of this documentary that talk about sinners being consumed from the earth and the wicked being no more, they point us to the fact that there is a very serious problem that's not just about the way we've treated oceans. It's a problem in our hearts, a problem of our sin. Points us as we continue to read through the Bible to that radical solution that we have. God sent his Son, who died and rose again, so that as we trust in him, we can know new life and new hope now and forever, including a glorious eternity in a perfect new world. And as we close, I think all of that helps us to understand how we can engage with those kind of environmental questions that are being raised increasingly at the moment, and how we engage with people like Extinction Rebellion, who are the most vocal of people supporting a radical new environmental agenda. I think this Psalm 104 shows us that we should care about the kinds of issues that David Attenborough and Extinction Rebellion are raising. That we should care about the condition of the oceans and biodiversity and deforestation and things like that. We should care. But we have a much more important reason to care. We care because these are things that were created by God, who continues to sustain them, that they all point to his greatness and his glory, that he's the one who filled this world with life. And who are we to work against that purpose? As Christians, we should think about questions like how we shop, how we travel, how much we recycle, and how we deal with stuff we no longer want. The environment's not the only factor in those decisions, but it's certainly a factor if we've understood Psalm 104 and seen God's glory in creation. This psalm gives us a better reason to be concerned about these kind of issues, but it also gives us a better hope, a much better hope. Because this psalm points us to a God who cares about this world much more than we ever could. A God who cares about this world much more than even the most committed Extinction Rebellion supporter. And we know that this God will renew this creation to make all things new, a new world with all of the beauty and more, but none of the pain, none of the suffering, none of the death. He will do that. We don't need to panic. We can trust him to work. And for those of us who trust in Jesus, we have an amazing eternity there that we don't deserve, that can be ours in him. And if you're someone who's joining us today, whether here in the building or at home, and you're not someone who trusts in Jesus, you may have spent some time thinking about environmental questions. We can't really avoid thinking about questions of plastics and recycling and everything else at the moment. And those are good things to think about. But please don't miss thinking about the most important issue of all. The issue of our sin. That sin that leaves us guilty before God. That sin that we can't deal with ourselves. We can't undo what we've done. That sin that can be forgiven in Jesus Christ, who died and rose again. As we're forgiven, we can know new hope, not just now, not just tomorrow, but forever. Please don't miss the most important issue today, this harvest. If you want to know more, either I'll be in the car park, or if you're watching at home, contact details at the end of the video, please get in touch. So you saw some photos at the beginning of the service. Photos of God's creation. You can go home later, you can watch them again, either on YouTube or on our website. And I hope that today has helped us to think a bit about how we should respond to those photos as we see the pictures of New Zealand and Porthcawl and places like that. It shows that we should respond, firstly, by saying, "You are amazing, God." To see that behind each of those pictures is a great God who's worked in creation and continues to work day by day. And as we look at those photos, we should also confess that we have sinned. We've not lived in this world as we should have done. We've not always treated God's world in the way that we should have done. But as we look at those photos, we can also pray, "Come, Lord Jesus," and look forward to that day when he'll make all things new. Bless the Lord, O my soul, praise the Lord. We're going to sort of close our service because there'll be a bit afterwards, but we're going to either listen or sing, "O Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder how great thou art," a song that points us to God's work in creation, in looking after this world, in sending his son to die for us, and then that day when Christ shall come with shout of acclamation and take me home, what joy shall fill me.